Welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Sam Gwilt, aka Sam Does Design. This is recorded literally on the precipice of him changing roles. Lots of stuff's happened in his life. He met some of his heroes as well. So Sam's going to be joining us on the show today to tell us all about that. And I just ran up the stairs. I immediately sat down to record this. And oh, I shouldn't be out of breath after. I was at the gym though all day today, so it's like fine. It's whatever. Before we get started with today's show, you guys all need to go and look at Skillshare as they've basically just rebranded the entire site. And you can get 2 free months of Skillshare by going to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign and get 2 free months of over 30,000 classes. I don't need to say much more than that. It's free for 2 months. Go and learn a new skill. Go and learn Affinity Designer if you want to move from Adobe to Affinity. If you want to learn about editing videos. If you want to learn from the masters of logo design and graphic design. People like Aaron Draplin and Paula Scher and Sagi Haviv. Go to Skillshare. By the link in the description, get your 2 free months, learn an amazing skill, and then come back and tell me what you've learned. Now, on to today's show with Sam. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today, I am joined by Sam Does Design again. Sam Gwilt, welcome back to the show. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me back on.
It's not a problem. I mean, lots of things have happened, and we're literally in kind of the a bit of a monumental shift for yourself, isn't it, right now? And I've kind of caught you on a good weekend to record some chats before. You have a whole bunch of new stuff happening. You're starting a new role, and there's so much to talk about. I'm just going to rearrange all of my windows so I can actually talk to you and see what we're talking about. So what I'd love to kind of hear from you about today, as I said just before we got started, is what's been happening? Because so much, I've been following your feed, so much has been happening. And just a quick rundown for people who may not know who Sam is. Sam is an industrial designer. And if you listened to the previous episode, we yelled at everyone from Silicon Valley for ruining the word product designer. But Sam, what has been going on?
There's been a lot going on in my life. The way I would describe it is between November and December, that was a really long year.
Oh, geez. Oh, that yeah. That is a way of putting it. Okay.
November and December was a long year. Oof. So, hello, everyone. For anyone who doesn't know anything about me, I am an industrial designer working in London. And I also have an Instagram and YouTube page where I share sketches and designs and stuff like that and try and show insights into my process a little bit as well. So because I do YouTube and stuff, I've been collecting lots of film equipment and audio equipment and all the good stuff that I'm really into, and it helps me make videos. And towards the end of 2019, I'd started to move more into videography for events and stuff as well, because that's an interest of mine. So I was actually booked to go and cover a design conference as a vlog type thing for my YouTube channel in November. And on my way to the airport, I was actually stopped by a group of people and mugged. Because I had all my stuff, I was on my way to the airport. It was absolutely everything that they got. Luckily, I was pretty much physically okay, minus a black eye and a few hits to the face, but luckily, and I am seriously lucky that I'm okay. And now, between November and now, I've sort of been rebuilding back up, getting some gear back, getting some confidence back, and now I feel like I'm in a good place to start. Actually, like now is when 2020 starts. Like I'm ready to move on and progress into the next decade. So. It has been a lot of stuff happening, but yeah, I feel like I'm at the other side and on the way up and up.
I mean, what a literal firecracker of a way to end the decade, really. And obviously, I cleared talking about this with you because obviously you've made it public. It's a fairly sensitive topic still. But I the second I saw that story go up, I was like, oh no. And do you want to know the kind of scary, funny thing, Sam? I was literally out in town that night.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah.
And I was like, God damn. Like, if I'd been, because I was thinking about asking whether you'd want to hang out that weekend that I was out. And I was like, Why is it? It always happens, and you hear about these things on telly, but you never think it could happen to either someone you know, or until it happened to you. I bet you never thought it could happen to you.
And even until like days later, I didn't think that it could happen to me. Like it still hadn't hit home yet. But the sad thing is that it could happen anywhere. I mean, I don't want to be doom and gloom about it, but you know, I was walking down a dim street was secluded. It was actually a bridge over a train station that I was getting to. So there are things that I will do now in the future that might take the risk down a little bit. So I'm going to be sticking to the main road, sticking to the public, you know, where it's really busy. But yeah, I can't stop what I'm doing. Like I can't let it affect me going out and doing my day-to-day stuff. I just can't do that. So I'm building up to that point as well. Yeah.
And looking forward, obviously, I'm very glad that your physical health is okay. But looking at your kind of, you mentioned building up your confidence and things again, and obviously doing things like going down main roads is kind of like a good answer to what happened. But obviously in terms of actually having the confidence to do that type of thing, does it worry you doing little things even now, kind of taking your phone out of your pocket in public or bank card or whatever it's going to be, rather than having all that equipment you have?
Yeah, it's the last few weeks walking down the street, especially because it's so cold outside and everyone's in the parkas and the hoodies, which is what the muggers were wearing. In the back of my mind somewhere, I just worry about that being in that scenario again. I've had a few people where people have just crossed the street to come and join my side of the street, and just because that's not their way that they need to go, and you know, and they end up joining just in front of me. My God, I was so scared. Even just a couple of days ago, that this type of stuff was happening. And I know that eventually that type of stuff is going to fade away and I'm going to be fine with that type of stuff again. But yeah, like you said, I second guess whenever I want to take my phone out of my pocket now. And if I need to take my card out of my pocket, I'm always covering it a little bit more than maybe I would have done, you know, tapping on it on the tube and stuff. You know, you put your debit card on there or your phone or whatever. Now it's always just a little bit like just covering up just a little bit. But I think that's going to get better as I move on. And I already feel a lot better than I did 2 weeks ago. And then I felt better than I did 2 weeks before. So I think it's just going to take time to get over that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not something that you can... I like the way you're phrasing it in that you're so confident that you are going to be able to kind of move past this. And I see from discussions we've had that that's very clear and you're the type of person who can work through this type of thing. But it's just interesting the way you phrase it, that I can get over this. And it's like, there's nothing... Because I've been having a lot of discussions around mental health and I've literally got a therapy appointment tomorrow that I'm starting. So these types of discussions have been on my mind recently and particularly for phrasing. Because whilst what happened was horrible, there's nothing wrong with talking about these kind of things.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, obviously there was a big community outreach to try and make sure you're okay and things like that, but have you felt that continued support? Have you been able to get some continued support from it as well?
Yeah, like you said, the community after I posted, I think helped a lot with just letting me know that there were good people still out there, you know? Not only just on Instagram and on YouTube when it first happened, but sometimes I even get a message every now and again and just say, hey, how are you holding up? Like, are you getting on and doing all right? Which is really good as well. And it's not just the community on Instagram and YouTube and stuff, but, you know, my friends and family that I cannot thank enough for the support. And you know, it is just checking in every now and again and just saying, you know, how are you feeling today? Or my girlfriend noticing that I'm a bit quiet on the tube and she'll, you know, pick up a conversation and, you know, take my mind off it, which is really helpful. And like you said, it's good to talk about this stuff and it's good to talk that, you know, other people might be feeling like this. I've actually just recorded a YouTube video as my big comeback. Big comeback is just me talking to camera. And I say, like, I feel I should probably talk to someone professionally about this. And because I've got this community and I've got this community around me, I feel like I could be an advocate for talking to people, and I could also encourage people to talk as well using my platform. So I'm at the very early stages of maybe, I don't know how it works, signing up and going to talk to someone about it, and then I'll be pushing for other people to reach out and talk to people as well, because I think it is really important to talk to someone about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the services are like in London specifically, but down where I am, kind of Southampton, Portsmouth area, there's a service called Mind in the UK, which is, it's kind of a self-referral thing, which then goes, I'm very early stages into this section as well. It's difficult though, because it's one of those things to balance, because when it comes to talking about this stuff online, it's a debate and idea I've had for many years of how much do you cross over the personal with the professional. Mm. And I think, sorry, someone's banging on something downstairs and it's making really loud, lovely tapping sounds. Hopefully no one at home can hear that, but we'll find out. Yeah. So blending those two things, professional and personal together, I feel like we've been pretty honest about these things. I've followed your stuff. You talk about personal stuff. You work, obviously, when you're filming your videos, you're at Precipice, and like, it's very clear that this is not your own space, and like, you're very open about this type of thing. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to mental health issues, this is something I've discussed with people in the past. It's like, what do you actually, how far do you go? Because sometimes people will say, yeah, well, no one's going to hire you if you say, I'm in a psych ward or I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z. But then at the end of the day, the opposite effect, I think, also applies, in that if you do talk about these things, people go, oh, this person's making this all this amazing stuff and sharing all these amazing stories and is also working on bettering themselves, or other people see you as more human. Do you think that this kind of blend between the professional content or presence with the personal side is something that we're going to see more of, maybe, or you're going to be doing more of? Obviously, you just mentioned that you might do.
I think that that is something that is going to become more apparent as more creatives get online and stuff. And what I actually think is the next generation. Like, so I'm in the middle of writing an article talking about the USPs of a designer. And what your USPs can be, and then how you can adapt those to find the right job.
So, just for anyone who might not know, what is a USP, Sam?
It's a unique selling point. So it's anything that you might see in a store. Like, it applies to products, it applies to whatever you might buy or purchase, and it's just something that makes it stand out over something else. And I think that this being open and being human with clients and saying, that there's this stuff going on as well, I think shows a strength that people are going to start doing even more. And even if that becomes a bit of a USP, where it's like, you know, as designers, we like to say that, you know, we do human-centered design, we do design for people, we like emotions and playing with them, you know, and really delving in deep to the way people think, and so you can design for that. So then to show people that, you know, you're in touch with your own way that you think, and you're working through that and helping people work through their stuff as well, I think would become potentially a USP of a designer to help prove that they're in touch with emotions and stuff as well. So I do think it is a bonus. But like you said, there is a fine line to balance the two sides of the story.
I think also we're going to start seeing then, well, I just, well, the second you said that, my brain immediately went, now I'm going to start seeing strategists who are like, I produce emotionally centered strategy. or like, we're going to sit down on my chaise longue and I'm going to ask you, how do you really feel? I can imagine that in people's bios already.
Yeah.
My God. But I totally agree with you. I totally agree. I think that there is some level of authenticity that surrounds this, providing you're not pushing it in a way that is glorifying things like mental health issues, or if obviously by glorifying, I mean suggesting that you should have this, or that it's not a problem. And in some cases, let's say, for example, I don't want to push this topic too deep because it gets to muddy waters. But if you were, say, an amputee or you were missing an arm or a limb or something like that, that is something that by talking about your story, sharing that, being authentic with it, explaining the problems, but also the ways you work around it and maybe some of the benefits of these ideas too, that's really good. But when people start doing things like, what's the example I can think of right now? If you were to say, oh, I have depression, and you're trying to sell it, you're trying to sell this on and push a product alongside this, or that just becomes a case of, well, that's a bit unethical.
Yeah.
But providing, I think, that people are authentic with this and are explaining the process they're going through, I'm sure many people will resonate with the video you've just made as well.
I hope so. I'm going to edit it slightly and then take out a few ums and ahs. And then maybe I'll post it tonight even. So I know that people listening, this come out in a few weeks, but that's my plan at the moment, is to just get it out as fast as I can. And you know, I want this video to mark, like, this is what happened. The video like caps it off. And then now it's like, okay, this is the future of the channel, or this is like the rest of forever. Like I'd like that to be the case. So I want to get that out as fast as I can actually.
Okay, so for people listening at home, that episode will most likely already be live, because this is going to be coming out probably a month after it's recorded. Right. So the link to either the video or at least Sam's channel will be down in the description for you to go and check that out as well. Now, moving kind of towards some other things that happened towards the tail end of the year, you met Dieter Rams.
I did. That was one of the highlights.
So Dieter Rams is, I know, one of your massive heroes, and a absolutely incredible designer who has basically carved through product design, graphic design, design in general, to bring a whole new focus to people throughout his entire career. And he basically shifted the landscape of design, didn't he, at one point, or multiple times, in fact.
Yeah.
So, firstly, what's the story behind that, Sam? Where did you meet this man? Because I just saw the picture and I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, it was a crazy week. So the story is that at Precipice Design, which is where I work, we were doing the project for the new Brown Audio speakers. And Dieter Rams used to design for Brown in the 50s and 60s, right the way up until the 80s or 90s. And he basically formed the landscape that is product design today. So we were doing this project as a company. And separately, my boss managed to get tickets to the grand opening of the Vitsu store in London. Now, there are two things that Dieter Rams is famous for. One is the work with Brown and the Brown electronics that he made. And then the other is the Vitsu range, which is a range of furniture and shelvings and lifestyle things like that. So those are the two companies that he's affiliated with. And he still is affiliated with Vitsu. And because I got my boss managed to get tickets to this opening, he actually couldn't make it in the end. And he knew the week before that he couldn't make it. So he just sent out an email to the company at Precipice and said, oh, I've got these tickets for the Vitsu grand opening. And rumor has it that Dieter himself is going to be there. And he's like, I can't confirm. But he was like, maybe I've heard somewhere that he might.
Back on like the IRC feeds.
I was like, I didn't want to seem rude to everyone else to be like, I'm 100% going before anyone else, because I read the email really fast. So I managed to swing it, because I was like, well, I can go and film it and then everyone can enjoy it. So
everyone can enjoy you shaking his hand. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, if like in the video, because he's getting on a bit now, is Dieter, he's like 80 or 90 years old, I can't remember, but he's sat there and he's got his walking stick cane, and everyone kind of formed a queue around him, and he wasn't there to do a meet and greet, he was just there to enjoy the evening. He was just there to have some nice wine and chat to some people and, you know, and see the store open. But everyone formed a queue around him. And we were all looking at each other like, this is really weird. We shouldn't be doing this. But also he's, you know, shaking everyone's hand and chatting, and he looks like he's quite enjoying himself. But it did feel a little bit weird. But I turned up at the event. They got the closed doors and everyone's waiting outside, and you could see there inside there Dieter already was. So even just seeing him through the glass, I was like, that's enough. Like if I don't manage to go and chat to him, like I'm within 100 feet, so I'm done.
I can imagine your face pressed up against the glass and you got like your tongue out and you'd got your nose pushed up against it and you're like, Dieter. Pointing at him, like eyeballing him.
Yeah. Oh man! Oh, the only reason
my Snapchat
is I had the camera. So if I was on film doing that, that's the end of my reputation.
We were literally just talking about being authentic. You can't not do that and not put it on film.
Exactly. It was a crazy experience because we just watched the Dieter Rams documentary that Gary Huswitz had made. I'd seen that at the premiere at the
Barbican. What's that called again?
It's just called Rams.
Okay.
The documentary is called Rams. It's about Dieter Ram, which I think is frustrating because if you Google Rams, it just comes up with like an American football team that are the Rams. I'm like, no, I don't want to know about American football. I want to know about Dieter Rams, the documentary.
I was expecting you to say it's just going to be a picture of goats.
That's the second page. But
I mean, how do they pick up a pencil? Like, what's going on here?
The whole experience was amazing. And it was literally like, because he was sat down, I had to kind of kneel down to get.
Well, you did the polite thing, man. Like when I saw that, I thought no one else will have done that. Like
everyone was sort of bending a little.
Yeah, bit. No. When you're talking to someone, this is something that I learned talking to lots of European friends and going to Japan and stuff. Like when you're talking to someone who is more senior than you. Yeah. You need to be at their eye level or lower. Like, don't make them look up at you. Like,
yeah. But it's also lucky that I did because he's an incredibly quiet man. He was, and he's German, and his English is not the best. He knows more English than I know German. That's a fact. But I had to put subtitles on the video that I had to really listen to because he was a very quiet man. And so much so that I didn't actually hear him while I was there. It's only after I left and could listen to the video and like really fine tune the audio, that is when I could actually hear him. But he was, you know, he was really well wishing of me and the community as well. It was a great experience to meet. And actually, off the back of that meeting. The owner of Vitsu is called Mark Adams, and he's been in charge of Vitsu now for a very long time, and he's worked closely with Dieter Rams over the past few decades. Mark Adams is on social media a lot. Like he is tuned in to social media. He's tuned on to Instagram and YouTube. So when I posted the video saying I've met Mark Adams and Dieter Rams, he started commenting on the videos, and I was like, "Is this a spam account? Like, is this real? Like, is this actually him?" And it was. He enjoyed the video so much that he actually invited me along to the Vitsu headquarters, which is in Leamington Spa, and I got to go hang out with Mark and get a tour of the building, which was designed in the same way that Vitsu products are designed.
Wow.
So it's all modular, and we were literally walking along this huge factory-style interior, And he was going along, and every 10 feet, he was like, oh, this design helps us to do this. Or like this little socket here allows us to like cordon off certain areas. And it's a little 3D printed thing. And it was just so fascinating to go and to see behind the scenes of the Fitzu stuff. I didn't turn that into a video because I was being a bit selfish. And I was like, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to actually be in the moment while I go. Instead of behind a camera. But yeah, the fact that that followed on directly because I made a YouTube video that he enjoyed was amazing end of the year as well. And a great space. And it turns up that the space that Vitsu is built in actually is featured in the Dieter Rams documentary as well. And you kind of see Dieter walking around and nitpicking certain design elements and saying, oh, we should do it like this instead. And just to watch his mind work like that, even at the age of 80 or 90 or whatever, was absolutely fantastic.
And I think you can actually go and view that documentary or purchase a viewing license through the website. So if you type in Dieter Rams documentary, there's probably a website there for you.
Yeah.
But so what was it like? Obviously, you've explained kind of what's just happened, but what was it actually like for you to meet someone of that caliber that you admire so much? Because not many people nowadays get to meet their quote-unquote mentors, should we say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the way that I would put it. And my girlfriend, Roz, who doesn't know too much about design, she's a paralegal. She doesn't do any design work. And she's like, why is this guy so important? And I'm like, imagine you're going to an event and you meet the inventor of law.
Like the inventor of law, sorry.
It's not even possible to describe. Like, this guy redefined what it means to be a designer. And I'm there shaking his hand saying, I'm a new designer. I've got this community online. And he's saying, like, well, good luck to you because it's tough out there. And the whole point that he was making at the event was the word design, like, you know, as a word is wrong because anything in the world is designed, but like most things are designed badly. So you shouldn't be able to put the word designed to anything because it's been so diluted because everything is designed, right? So he was saying, we should use the German word just in the same way that we use kindergarten. Like that's a global word now. He said that we should use the German word Gestaltung, which means it's like the study of form and the study of like hierarchy and stuff like that. And when he says that we should only be able to use that when something is properly and nicely designed, because everything else in the world, someone had to design it. It just so happens that it's bad. You know, so he would like us to change that word out. And I think that's quite interesting as well, that, you know, he's out here and he doesn't do a lot of design work nowadays. He doesn't do any design work. He does a lot of thinking. So he's always very philosophical about the way that the world should be.
What was that word again? Gestaltung.
Yeah, it's Gestaltung. I can't remember how to spell it.
But I can imagine he's coming in with that thought and he's like, I'm going to write something about this. I'm going to write my final book about this. And then everyone just calls like a piece of good design a Dieter or something like that.
But like, we missed the moment. It's close enough.
That's interesting though. It's interesting. So did he do a presentation then? Is this?
Yeah, he gave a little presentation. And again, he was on the microphone, but my God, he was so quiet. I had to do some subtitles. And even in the video, like, he said one little bit and there was no way that I could possibly understand what he was saying. So in the subtitles, I just had to write, like, I didn't catch this, sorry. And then I just moved on to the next bit that he was
inaudible
saying.
Inaudible Dieter.
Yeah. But yeah, it really was surreal, the whole event. I'm actually really glad that I have that video to look back on because it was so surreal. It felt like a dream being there. And now I can go back and watch that video and it's like, oh, it did actually happen. So to be able to have that video is really cool as well.
So now you've met Dieter, what do you think is going to be the next person or thing you want to go see? What's next on your design bucket list then? Because okay. I imagine Dieter was kind of at the top.
Yeah, so I could retire now.
Yeah. Like we're going into something else. We're going into Bitcoin, boys. Off we go.
And I mean, there's so many people that I would love to meet. So I was doing a lecture at a university a few months ago, and someone asked me, who is your hero that you look up to? And it took me a while to think about it, but actually the one person that I would like to meet at the moment is Adam Savage from Mythbusters.
Special effects guru. God.
Yeah, the fact that he's just making, like he's a maker. And he has a YouTube channel now called Tested, and he releases half an hour videos of just like, today I'm going to make a prop for Comic-Con or something, and just to sit and watch him for half an hour just making and just in his workshop, and I absolutely adore his passion to design and making and you know, getting stuff done. So yeah, I'd really like to meet him. I think he'd be a cool guy to meet. But there's loads of people that I'd like love to meet as well. Like in the same sort of sphere, there's Simone Gietz, another YouTuber who makes shitty robots. That's her name for it. I don't normally swear.
It's fine. It's my show, mate. I don't care.
So to meet the makers, I think would be amazing.
Yeah, I think. When you watch, because the last Adam Savage video I watched, there was probably about a 10-year gap, 10-year, probably 6 or 7 year gap between the last Mythbusters episode I watched and his YouTube channel. Because the last Tested video I watched, which is his YouTube channel, was him emptying his pockets. And just to see what it was in his pockets at all times of the day. And he was like, occasionally I'll just, you know, carry this weird thing around. And I can't remember what it was, but... And then he was talking about, he said that, oh, I keep running into this problem, so I just made one.
Yeah.
Or I just made something to fix this problem.
It's amazing, like, yeah.
I literally cannot use a saw, so...
Yeah. I mean, like, neither can I, but I would like to think that I can. That's what Adam lets me think, that yeah. I can use a saw because I'm watching him do it.
we could all be Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Man, that show, it ruined my childhood when I found out that Adam and Jamie didn't like each other.
Yeah, they really do not get on.
Seriously, guys, people listening at home, go and watch Mythbusters and just look how much disdain Jamie has for Adam, especially in the later series. But yeah. That show was incredible. Like, it must have got so many people interested in experimenting or just picking something that sounds stupid or a random idea. And just playing with it and seeing what happens. Because they didn't just test... They didn't just pick up things like physical limitations. They were picking up literal myths, like yeah. local legends, and seeing what they could do with them.
Yeah, it's amazing. I do know, like, since the show finished, I do know that they have another season, but with different presenters. I think Adam turns up every now and again, but I haven't been involved in what... I haven't watched
it yet. So it was like Carrie... It was a redheaded lady called Carrie, I believe, and then two other guys.
I see.
And I distinctly remember Carrie being pregnant for like a whole season.
So
she's like stood on the sidelines doing some stuff, but she's like 7 or 8 months pregnant. It's very strange.
Not going near all the explosions and stuff.
No, not the one to like get thrown around in ropes and elastics. Yeah. But so Adam Savage, I'm just trying to. Simone would be a good one because. When I've watched her videos, she's just got such an interesting personality. And obviously, she had a brain tumor and back and forth through hospital things. But just her mind in general of, hey, I'm going to just make a stupid robot that hits me in the face and upload it to YouTube. And now she's like a prominent maker in the whole, just in robotics, really.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it, again, like she just goes to show that anyone can pick it up. Which I think is a great message. I mean, I haven't done any robotics. I haven't picked it up, but I enjoy watching her doing it. So,
yeah, there's also a guy. I can't remember his name. I watch his YouTube videos all the time. I'm just gonna type it into Google because people can. What is his name? He's like some little here. Here he is. Michael Reeves. Have you heard of Michael Reeves?
Okay, no, that's a new one, so I'm going to add that to the list.
He makes things along similar lines to Simone. So he did one recently called Taser Tag, and his thing is like tasering people. He really enjoys tasering people. So he's got a YouTube series where he just does robotics, but he taught himself how to code. And one of my favorite videos by him is Taser Tag, where he takes laser tag vests and guns, and whenever you line the laser up, it tases the person who's wearing the vest. And then there's another one where he has a Patreon, so he uses the Patreon money to buy like 10 drones. And he codes into the drones and programs into the drones that when they see a human face, they charge at it. So he sets all these 10 drones up in a room, in like a room in his house, and he turns them on and they just rise.
Oh no.
And then they just dive bomb.
Oh no.
And this video clip is so good of him just being like, no, 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 no. And they just bundle all on top of it. But yeah, Michael Reeves is also just absolutely hilarious. And he's friends with like iDubbbz and all those types of people too.
Amazing. That's definitely one for the list. And what I love about finding a new YouTuber like that is because they've been making so much content, I can just binge the whole thing. And I love just going through every single video. It does get a little bit sad by the end when it's like, now I need to wait until next week because I've caught up with everyone. One person I did that with recently was Alex Steele. So Alex Steele, he's a blacksmith. And his videos I don't know if that's his real name or not, but it suits if it is. And he just makes like swords and crazy weapons out in America.
Is he the guy who made like a Minecraft sword and made like keyblades and video game stuff? Is
he that? I don't know if he's done a lot of video game stuff. The people that do video game stuff, I watch Bob, but I like to make stuff. And Evan and Caitlin. The amount of YouTube I watch is probably embarrassing. I shouldn't go through my list of like everyone to watch.
Pull up your subscribed list. Come on.
Yeah, we're going to be here all day. So many. But yeah, those are like Evan and Caitlin. I like to make stuff and Bob. David Picciuto makes just woodworking videos, and just I love watching people make stuff. I think it's an amazing thing to be able to do. And one day, if we're going to talk about like the future and what I hope for 2020 and moving on towards the next decade, all I want from life is to be able to have a shed with tools and work stuff. Like that's my absolute dream. To be able to make stuff like the YouTubers that I'm watching. And me and Roz, we just both look at each other like, this is going to be us one day. Like we're both counting down the days until we can have a garage or a shed with a bandsaw and some sanders.
You're going to build
stuff. Yeah,
you're
going
to make some drones attack you, and Roz is going to be like, this is not legal. You can't do this.
Yeah.
You can't do this. Health and safety. You can't do this.
Exactly.
She's going to yell at you.
That's why I'm keeping her around. Now in trouble. That's why.
Oh, I see. So she's your safeguard for just doing too much of the crazy shit.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, also the other joke is that good luck trying to find a shed in East London, mate.
You'll be doing this
in an airing cupboard.
Unless we're billionaires, we've got to become billionaires first, and then we can afford a shed in London.
Oh mate, you could just get a chalet down at the beach near me for 25 grand a year.
Oh nice, they're easy. Wooden hut.
Yeah, exactly. Wooden hut down at the beach, you know. Bandsaw in there, no electricity.
Yeah, I do think that we're both in London. I would say for the next 3 or 4 years, Roz would say for between 5 and 10 years, depending on how she wants her job to go. But then after that, we will be running to the countryside to try and get a shed. That's the plan.
I don't think that's a bad plan. I mean, I was literally, who was it? Was it Mast Co Studio, for people listening at home? They did a brand identity recently for like these modular homes that basically turn up in a shipping container and you can build them within like a week, if that. So I'm very much tempted to be like, Lydia, do you just want to like get one of these? Like, we just buy a plot of land for a bit of money and live in a box. And so looking to 2020, and looking through the rest of this year, you've already kind of had a couple big changes come through. I mean, as we record this for people at home, you're on your last week working at Precipice, and you're going to be starting a new role soon, right?
Yeah, so just to tie up all of the crazy things that were happening at the end of 2020, in the 2019, I actually decided to start looking for a new role. And I started looking, not with necessarily the idea that I want to leave. It was just I wanted to see what else was out there. I've been at Precipice now for 3 years. I interned with them, and then I became a designer with them. And at the age that I am, at the point in my career, I just thought, let me just go and see what else there is. So I started sending out some emails with portfolios attached. And I sent one to Layer Design, which I've always been a big fan of Layer Design. It was founded by Benjamin Hubert, who is a designer that I've enjoyed their work. And yeah, I just thought, you know, let's see where this goes and see what happens. So luckily, I was accepted and got offered a job as a junior designer at Layer. So I'm going to be starting in next week. Like, this is my last week, so a week tomorrow I start, which is it's the first time that I've ever changed jobs. This is my first job move, which is a little bit daunting, but also really exciting as well. Like I said, to see what was out there, this I think is going to be a great way to do that. Layer does some amazing designs. They're another design consultancy, so I'm moving from one consultancy to another. But Layer is slightly different in the fact that they're almost a brand in themselves, like as a company. So what you normally see with Layer's clients are designed for this company in collaboration with Layer. And they actually get their name on the front of the box, which is not usually the case for a design consultancy. The way that consultancies usually work are they're in the shadows, they do the design work for the clients, and then the client either builds on that or takes it forward and takes it to be finished. So the fact that Layer is on the box as well, I think is going to be really interesting to see the different type of environment that might bring. So I'm really looking forward to it.
So what does that look like? How do you achieve that kind of thing? Have they explained the details maybe behind that? Because it sounds to me like that's either an investment thing or that's a client collaboration because they see the potential of Layer's brand. Do you know anything about how that's achieved? Because I'm sure myself running Inferno and other designer type people who have maybe their own small studios to be able to slap their name on it. Imagine Pentagram slapping their name on some of the recent client projects they've done, so in collaboration with Pentagram.
Yeah.
Not that they need that, but you get the idea.
Yeah, it is a strange scenario to have a consultancy that can do this. And I think it's built on a long line of... Well, I think it's also the fact that Layer make their own product as well. Like, they make their own in-house stuff. So then they become the brand that has made these things. It helps a little bit to bring the name to the forefront for the new clients coming along as well. In terms of being able to, I don't know what I'm allowed to say and not say. I don't want to get in trouble before I've even started, because I start next week. What I did hear while I was in the interview is I asked Benjamin what type of stuff that they've got in the pipeline, like what types of projects. And he said, whatever you see in the press that we've done, that is less than 10% of what we're actually working on. So they have the rest of the 90% of stuff that is like a usual design consultancy type thing where you're not allowed to talk about it. So they can only talk about the 10%. So I think in that way, they're maybe more like a consultancy than I might think, because when I get there and realize, oh, there's all these other projects that I can't tell anyone about. which is very similar to the way that it is at Precipice Design. So it might be more that way that I'm thinking at the moment. But yeah, I think it's just a constant, every product that you do, you make a point of putting your name on it. And I think that's how, after 10 years or so, I think that's how they've got to the point now where clients can say, oh, we want to work with Layer and put the name on the thing, you know? I think if anyone else out there is wanting to get to that point, I think it's just dedication of constantly attributing your name to the thing that you're doing, and then that is what you will become known for. And then whoever wants that specific thing that you're doing, you become the go-to person for that.
It's also difficult to swing that depending on what type of project you work on. So mm-hmm. if you're not working with something that actually produces... hello, knocking. Hello, tip, tap, tap. So unless you're making like an actual product or a piece of software or something like that, something that's more tangible that people can actually get see an outcome from rather than just say strategy, it's very difficult to actually have the leverage or even the discussion to say, okay, well, we're going to do your marketing, but we want in collaboration with. Well, that kind of defeats the point of the marketing because now someone else's name is all over our message. But if it's a physical product, like you say, but it's interesting that the consultancy you're moving to, because I remember we had this discussion about Precipice, is that it's difficult to tell people what you do. And it's very difficult for them to actually explain to what they do to other people other than relying on word of mouth referrals and things like that.
Yeah, it is very difficult. And even when I went to this interview with Leia, and I went through my portfolio and got to the end of the portfolio, and Benjamin turned to me and he said, but where's the nuts and bolts? Like, where's the design stuff? And I was like, that's all I can show you because everything else is under NDA and stuff. And I think I could have done a better job of getting some real meaty design work in there. I could have put more of my own stuff in there probably. But I was in a really difficult position because I couldn't talk about anything. And actually at that point, it becomes more, it's very highly regarded if you don't buckle under the pressure and you carry on saying, I can't show you anymore. Because what you can't do in that scenario, and what people have done when interviewing, or I've heard stories of people doing this when they're interviewing, is they'll go, okay, fine, just between you and me, this is actually what I've been working on. And that's a big no-no. So that's that. So maybe you can then show some more nuts and bolts, real stuff, but you just lose the fact that you can keep the confidentiality.
No one will trust you. Like this,
exactly.
You'd be the guy. You'd be the hire, and they wouldn't hire you. They wouldn't hire you at all because you'd be known as the guy in the office who goes and tells all his mates down the pub.
Yeah.
Lydia was explaining to me that she met someone a while ago at an event who worked for a video games company, and he had been, I don't know what the right word is. He had had meetings with his managers and stuff, because apparently they'd been working on this massive project for a long time and stuff had been leaked. And what had happened is multiple people from the company had just in passing said to their friends, oh, we're working on this for these people.
Right.
And one of those friends, in inverted commas, just went online and just blurted it to a paper or to a publication.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not, it is where it comes back to is the person who worked at the company who blabbed. And if you're in a hiring process and you're under NDA to, I can't talk about this. In fact, I would say it's probably more professional to be like, oh, okay, so you value the place you worked at previously more than my question about, can I dig a little deeper? You value the terms of service. You value the ethics code that your previous place of work has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really... I think that's like a must to show that you're going to then give the same courtesy to your new company.
That's the word, that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like you're going to give the same service to the new company and not go and tell everyone else after that.
You're just going to walk around into the new office being like, hey guys, just showing your phone across, being like, these are the people I've worked with. Hi, this is me. I want my badge of honor now. Thank you. So you're excited to start this new role. And obviously, at this point, you'll have been a month in. So a month-ish in by the time this episode comes out. And yeah, I'm super excited for you, man. The second you put that up, I was like, damn, boy's moving up. So your new role, is it, you've got a junior designer. Is that strictly going to be sticking with product? Or because I saw that Leia does identity stuff too, or brand-related things as well. So are you going to be a bit of, you're going to be doing a bit of everything?
I think, I should have asked questions when I was at interview.
Yeah.
The people at Precipice, they were asking me, oh, so what's your day-to-day going to be? What's all this? What's, you know, what are you going to be doing? And I was like, actually, I don't know. I didn't ask.
I just got stuck in the loop, guys. I kept saying, I'm afraid I can't tell you any more about that. My lawyer says I should decline answering. It was all hot and sweaty and they had some lights on and I was weirdly cuffed to the table.
I'm gonna take it for whatever it is, like whatever this job is. In my mind, I would like to hope that I can do a bit of both. Like whatever project needs help on, I can chop and change and move across and do different things. I do know because I've already been started to get copied in on company emails. So I do know that someone has left and I'm being brought in to take up some other jobs that they were working on. The trouble is I don't know what jobs they were working on. So I guess I'll find out next week. But yeah, I'm really interested to go and work for a company that on their website says we do user interaction, user interface experience, almost like a separate entity. Like on the website it's split, these are our products, these are the UX and the UI and the strategy stuff. I'm really excited to go and see what that's all about as well.
Awesome. Well, best of luck to you, man.
Thank you, I'm
very excited and very proud of you, because I know obviously from what the journey you've had and obviously the end of last year and all the other things to fit all of this in as well and to start a new role, and you're moving, you're literally going from West London to East London. Mm-hmm. And so is Leia in more east central then?
Yeah, so they're based in, I think, zone 2 east. So they're in the
fairly close,
full part of town of like Shoreditch, Hackney, Bethnal Green, those types of places. So we're moving a little bit further out, even still, again, just to try and find some more space, because London flat prices are mind-boggling.
Still going up?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, East London is the cheaper side, but yeah, supposedly, anyway.
Yeah.
And what do you kind of, because I get this question quite a lot, which is, or have done in the past, of people saying, should I go to London for a job? Should I go to, I think we might have covered this in the last show, but I just, now you're moving between jobs and kind of moving where you live and following the career path in London, shall we say. Do you think it's really been worth it to be in London for everything that's happened?
Yeah.
Or a big metropolitan city, because you could probably apply this to Manchester or to Berlin or to New York or places like that too.
Yeah, I mean, it is tricky because it is a completely different lifestyle. I mean, personally, I'm from a small village in the Midlands. So anything bigger than a small village is crazy busy for me. I do
two
think
lanes of traffic.
Yeah. Crazy. I do enjoy living in London. I do enjoy, like, I was out with friends last night and I could just hop on the tube on the way back and didn't even have to think about taxis or Ubers or anything. But there it does have the downsides, like the price. And sometimes I don't like it being so busy. I enjoy a quieter pace sometimes. In terms of, is it best to go to a city for like a career or something? I think it depends on the person. Like there are friends of mine that want the city lifestyle, but they don't want it so busy like in London. So they really enjoy living in Manchester. It's a quieter town. It is still a big city, but it is a lot quieter and a lot slower paced sometimes than London. But even still, Roz is really frustrated with me at the moment, because I've been with Roz for a long time. We've been like 8 years, and we met at college. And all the time that I was at university, I was trying to get Roz to come down to London. And the plan was, let's live in London. Well, you know, you'll be a lawyer, I'll be a designer, like come down to London. And then she's finally moved this year. So she's been living with me now for 8 months. And now, after everything that happened at the end of last year, I was talking to Roz saying, oh, you know, maybe there's some design jobs out in Bath, or there's some design jobs in Bristol. Like, let's just move further out. And she was like, for 8 years, you've told me to come to London. Now I'm here. We're not leaving. I'm not.
Suck it up. Roz putting her foot down, yeah, as the lawyer, like, she okay. is, or yeah. paralegals as she is. Yeah. But goodness me, that's funny.
But, you know, all of that is just to say that in my mind previously, I had thought that you need to go to a city to get a career. After looking into more places outside, I've realized that there are actually quite a lot of jobs outside of the city. It just comes with a slightly different lifestyle that's going to come with that area as well. So what I don't want people to stress about is, oh my God, I need to move to a city. It's expensive. It's busy. I don't like those things, but I need to have a career. I don't want people to think that. And I do think that there are plenty of opportunities in smaller towns and places like that as well.
Yeah, and I think you're a testament to that, of small town farm boy, country boy, coming to the big city, yeah. not being completely bewildered and not ending up a chimney sweep. So, so speaking, and fingers crossed for all those opportunities that you've got coming up, because I think you're going to have a pretty good year coming through. So Sam, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Where can people find you on the internet?
Yep. So I am on Instagram. I'm on YouTube. I dabble on Twitter. They can find me at Sam Does Design on all of them. It's Sam_Does_Design. Yeah, those are the places that I hang out.
Fabulous. And go and check out Sam's latest video, where he's kind of capping off 2019 and explaining to you what he's going to be doing in 2020. If that video, hey, it better be live. I'm holding you to it now.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a month, but by the sounds of it, it'll be out well before then. So link to that down in the description for today's show. Thank you very much to Sam for joining us. And thank you for listening at home. And yeah, if you listen to this show on Apple Podcasts or a platform that allows you to review the show, please leave us a 5-star review. Otherwise, Sam is going to come and yell at you. And all the reviews will be listed and spoken about and told about when I do the next solo episode. So make sure you get that in to get a mention on the show as well. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again same time next week. Bye for now.